Hello, motion picture brains, that's you. Fans of light, darkness, composition, celluloid, zeros, and ones. Welcome back to another episode of the Through the Lens podcast. The unedited audio of our full conversation with a cinematographer, and in this episode we spoke with the amazing Steve Cozens, who is known for, amongst other things, the films of Flower and Garnet, Citizen Gangster, Tracy Fragments, Snowcake, and several other wonderful things. He also, I think, shot many episodes of a TV show in Canada called The 11th Hour, and also one, I think it was called Deal or something. It was a casino show. Anyway, we met up with him in October of 2012 in Montreal in the condo of our producer Jesse Eichmann's parents. That's where we shot. And we got to give a special thank you to Gary and Judith. And if you've never met Judith or Gary, let me tell you, they are some wild people. They are pretty crazy. And we got to give them a big thanks for letting us use their home, which was fantastic. It was a beautiful location. And I have to say, it was an honor to interview Steve Cozens, because this guy is truly an amazing talent in Canada. And if he was in the States, he'd probably have a really big career at this point. He has a big career here. He's outstanding, but he is just such a good photographer, and it comes across in everything he does. If you want to check out the Hollywood video version of this interview, you will find it at craftdark.com as season one episode, I don't even know, of Through the Lens, or youtube.com/craftdark. You can also subscribe if you're feeling nerdy, which we would encourage you to do. It should also be noted that during this interview, Steve wore a really, really, really cool vest, and when I had my back turned, it bit me.
But he's in the new Twilight.
Uh-huh.
He's a Hollywood actor, but he really wants to get into filmmaking. He's a really good filmmaker, and so he did an adaptation of Chekhov's The Seagull. And the cast, William Hurt is in it, and it's just... It's going to be good.
What's it called?
Days and Nights, right?
Days and Nights, but it is basically a
film adaptation. It's an adaptation, but it's, you know, it's twisted a bit. It's not a direct kind of, you know.
Chekhov is the one playwright, because my background was in theater before I got into film. Chekhov is the one playwright that I can safely say I never was able to wrap my head around.
Yeah.
It's not like I read something from Mamet, and I go, it doesn't matter if I ever direct this or make it or act in any way, that I 100% will, you know, nail it. It's that I fundamentally get it, yeah. I think.
Yeah.
Right? Williams, you know, Eugene O'Neill, like, I get those, Chekhov is the one where, and I don't know if it has to do with translations or...
I think people think... People think that Chekhov is so kind of heavy, but often...
They're all called comedies, right?
Yeah, they really are. There's a lot of humor in there that I don't think is drawn out in a lot of productions that you see of Chekhov.
No, I know. They're terrible, because they come morose. And
yeah, so I think it is partly in the translation, right? When they come to the stage, people don't bring that... It's very dark humor that's in there.
I know. And it's also a Russian humor. That's the thing. Yeah, it's a specifically Russian... Anyway, are we good to go?
We are rolling.
Awesome. Okay, so welcome back to crafttruck.com and our series Through the Lens, and we are extraordinarily pleased today to have with us one of Canada's gems, one of Canada's cinematic gems, geniuses, somebody who I fear is gonna at some point be... The rest of the world's going to figure it out, and you're going to be swept down shooting movies in L.A., New York, and London, and everywhere else, and we'll never hear from you again. But Steve Cozens, director of photography. Cinematographer, director of photography.
Whatever you
want to call it. Captain laid back, too, apparently.
I don't know, trying to stay easy, not get nervous, you know.
Well, there's nothing to get nervous about. So, right before we started this, you were talking about what your favorite film is, which happens to be my favorite film of yours, so much so that I think I got into a debate with your agent about it.
About Flower and Garnet.
Yeah. So I'll tell you how I saw this film. It was at the Vancouver Film Festival in 2002.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I had a short film there. This isn't about that, but I stepped you know, we got a pass, so we're going to go see other pictures. Mm. And step into this theater, and, you know, at this point, I'm really interested in cinematography. You know, now I'm starting to pay attention to things in a different way. And this circular brush on a floor, you know, if I'm not mistaken, opens the movie with Callum Keith Rennie staring through a window at a... Mm. And it's all told pretty much silently that his wife has died.
Yeah.
Immediately, what's going through my mind is, this is... There's not a set in there. There's sets when they're sitting on the couch in these dimly lit Northern Ontario... No, not Northern Ontario, no, Western Canada houses that don't get a lot of light. There's a picnic scene out back with a barbecue for the kid who wants a barbecue for it's freezing cold. There's so many shots scenes I want to ask you about, but they all looked completely natural and at the same time, beautiful. Beautiful and cinematic, like you hadn't betrayed anything of the material about this small story that takes place in a small suburban area. Yeah. Can you just talk about what you're, you know...
Well, that was my first film. And I think... You know, I've always been... I think I was sort of weaned on Tarkovsky films. Mm-hmm. Sven Nykvist, so a lot of natural light coming through windows. I think when I started to shoot, that was something that I tried to emulate because I really loved those films. And I think when I got to Flower and Garnet for my first film, I wanted to keep it natural and whatever I could do to do that. Then I was really trying to light... to make things look natural. These days, I will use natural light. I really don't like... I'm trying not to light these days. I think the more that I, you know, advance in my career, in my craft, in my art, the more I'm trying to take lights away. Right. And I hear DPs say that a lot. I'm terrible with names. The guy that shot Sleepy Hollow...
Emmanuel Lubezki.
Because he's so typically known for those big, broad, side sources, really creamy, soft. And for, what's the film he did, anyway, now he tries to get the same effect, but just using natural light. And I read an article where he's really trying to get rid of light to just, you know, be natural. Anyway, I think that comes with confidence as a DP, you know, because at the beginning you just want things to be so perfect, you know. Mm-hmm. And for me now, I'm not interested in perfection really. Like, I'm more interested in naturalism, and you know, if the natural light is coming in, it's kind of hard, or you're in a room and the pot lights in the ceiling, you turn them on and you get kind of a hard shadow on the face. I actually love that. The more that I can bring in naturalism into it, the more happy I am these days. Uh-huh. With Flower and Garnet, I was still learning how to light, but trying to keep it natural by lighting. So there's quite a few things there that were lit, but lit naturally these days.
Can you tell me a bit about the shot? I think before the I think it's Garnet. Is it Flower or Garnet? Before he shoots his hand.
Yeah.
Which is just, I won't forget. Again, I saw the film once, and I won't forget that moment. Mm. But when he confronts the dog with the gun, and there's this tunnel.
And
you just see him through this tunnel. We were talking just before about Harris Savides and the opening shot of Birth. This reminded me of that. That it was so. I mean, were you very cognizant of trying to get the right? Or was it just, did it just happen?
No, Keith and I, we really like this area. I can't remember the name because I have a terrible memory. Up in northern BC, but we drove around a lot trying to find the right culvert, and we found this one that was amazing and abandoned, and it was safe. I think it was an issue just us getting in there and shooting under there because it was on an active train trestle.
Uh-huh.
Or train track under it. But yeah, we wanted something that, you know, we're... had a really nice shape that went into nature at the end. It wasn't just, you know, a street or something, you know, and that had a little creek that came down into it. And I remember it was a challenge to make it feel like he was in the dark in the tunnel. And I remember being challenged to how to light that so that it felt like he was, you know, in darkness, which is one of the toughest things as a DP, is how to light darkness, you know?
Right.
So,
And also in the film, speaking of Light and Darkness, the scenes that are in the, when they're all sitting around watching TV, I think there's like one, almost like a lamp like that one, that's a practical in the background.
Yeah.
And it just feels like it has this perfect sort of blue from the TV. I mean, did this take a long time to set up, or was it?
That, I think, was one image 80 on the ground. And I think I had, maybe the gaffer was, had a couple of flags manipulating it a little to make it feel like TV, but with some diffusion and some blue gel on it too. What I find too often that in with TV gags that they're too flickery, but if you watch TV often, they'll be, you could watch something for a minute and it doesn't actually flicker, you know? So I'm neurotic about TV flicker and what it looks like to make it look natural. I think it's overdone too much, you know?
Another shot, because for me this was, the whole picture was, again, a great Canadian picture. And as a side note, in the Genie films that year, there was a montage of Canadian films that were made that year, and there was one shot from Flying Ground. I went, the minute it came on the screen, I was like, look at that, you know. And I think it was just a single of the boyfriend with the little mustache, you know, but it still looks so gorgeous. In the scene where Callum Keith Rennie finally goes and gets Garnet out of the crib, the movie opens on him staring at the boy in the crib, evidently, you know, subtextually not able to forgive, and it ends on basically him sort of pulling him up, this now 6-7 year old boy, out of the crib. And holding him, you know. Was it clear that that was the arc of the movie? And what did you do photographically about it? Because I remember it was so dark, and I felt like I was just a fly on the wall watching this. Mm-hmm. And it was moving, you know. It was extremely moving.
That was something we planned. Keith had written into that. The interesting thing about that scene is that Keith, and nobody knows this, but Keith was actually, we had to lose the boy because, of course, we had worked him too many hours a day, or like his time was up. So Keith was the one off camera, like who Callum was crying in relation to was Keith, who was, I think Keith sat in the crib, if I recall, and basically just talked to Callum. And that's what brought out that scene.
No kidding.
And I think we were pretty rushed in the lighting. You know, I look at that and I think I would have done the lighting differently. But, you know, I just wanted that kind of one light source.
Effect.
Yeah, and I think this shot where they come together and hug, I always thought that, again, because I think it was rushed. And to me, it always felt too dark. But then when I see it today, I saw it not long ago. I don't mind how dark it is. I think it's okay. You see that they're hugging. You see the boy, you know, wrap his arms around him.
It's amazing. So we can talk about the film for a long time, but in a film that is so much about like this kind of desolate world and these lonely characters, and there's so much bleakness to it, how do you approach it? Like, is there a palette choice? Is there like, you know, are you conscious about it, or do you just kind of like go with the scene or with the show? I mean, what?
I think for sure Keith's also very particular about colors and isolating colors and wardrobe. And, you know, we wanted things a little bit more muted. And, you know, there were conscious choices all along about what was in the room and, you know, the color of the curtains and to make the light a little bit more goldeny. And, you know, sometimes, often a low budget, you get into a place, it's the only place you have access to, and, you know, you have to use what's there. The house that we actually shot in, a lot of the set design, the decor was actually there. It was the house that we wanted.
It was there.
So we used it. We, for sure, Keith and I talked about a palette of, you know, more browns. We wanted more earthy tones and bringing out colors in certain scenes and letting other colors kind of disappear. And we all, you know, we kind of mapped that out throughout, you know.
Well, it was a beautiful picture. It was certainly one of Canada's best over the past, one humble opinion, one of Canada's best for the past decade.
Yeah, thanks.
Beautiful picture.
Let's talk about your beginnings, because you said Flower and Garden is your first picture. Mm-hmm. So how did you start off? How did you get going? I mean, because you look at your career, and if you basically, you know, you start, it looks like you just started shooting. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, and...
Yeah. I went to Emily Carr in Vancouver.
Yeah.
And I made a film, my own film. I was making my own films. I made an experimental black and white film that I didn't intend on sending it out to festivals or anything, but when people started to see it, they said, oh, you should send this out to, you know, this festival and that festival. And it, humbly I say, it won every festival that I put it into for the experiment, either experimental or documentary. And it was after that that people started asking me to shoot their films, and before I knew it, I was a DP, and I hadn't really intended on being a DP. It just started happening. So yeah, when I got out of school, I just started shooting, and I shot karaoke video for a while.
Uh-huh.
I always say that it's actually where I learned to light, is in shooting karaoke, because, which I know it sounds funny, but we, you know, we had to shoot two videos a day, and we would have to go into some place that we hadn't seen, and I used to have to light a room and try to make it look good, and I always compared it to a Rubik's Cube, just, you know, having like 20 minutes to light a place and make it look good, and... So I did that for a year, and I really feel like I learned to light in that 1 year, you know? I mean, it's been an ongoing process, but in that year, I learned so much. I just started shooting, and I didn't do the union thing. I just was a DP kind of from art school on. So.
That's fabulous. And so going back to your influences, so you mentioned Tarkovsky, mm-hmm. nostalgia, Solaris, you know, all these, and Sven Nykvist, mm-hmm. who, the master, you know, any other influences on that you can consciously name?
Well, for sure, Roger Deakins, like every DP.
Right.
And Harris Avides, definitely. The woman that shot Sweetie, I think her name's Sally somebody.
I'm blanking now.
I remember Sweetie when it came out. It was...
Sweetie?
Sweetie, an Australian film.
Alexis is going to find it.
Yeah, I forget the director. Jane Campion.
Jane Campion.
Yeah, so it was her first film. And I remember it was shot in a way that had nice angles, and it had style that really inspired me at the time. This was in art school, and I watched it again and again. There was something going on there that inspired me.
And what was it specific?
I think camera angles and lighting and just the overall, you know, aesthetic of the film. I appreciate just photography wise.
Right. Now you are. If I may say so, sometimes, you know, like I try and reach out and say what I see and somebody else is working there. That's not what I was doing at all. Mm-hmm. But that being said, your cinematography, if I may say so, is the stuff that feels natural, motivated, naturally, you know, you don't go, but yet at the same time is always a compelling composition, a type of photograph, a motion picture that just makes you relax into it, and it can feel very dynamic at times, even when it's natural. Do you ever have the desire to say, you know, you're flipping the channel at night and you're looking at CSI and there's a sun coming in from every window and you, you know, sorry to CSI, and you go, you know, like, yeah, you know, one of these days I want to do that. I want to put like gigantic lights up everywhere. Or are you just going further and further into?
No, I often, you know, when people ask me about my work, I would say that I'm most interested in a stylized naturalism.
Uh-huh.
That's how I normally, because I like to push things a little bit into like slightly magical or slightly unreal, but still keep it natural.
Uh-huh.
But I don't, yeah, like having multiple suns and stuff like that, I can't stand.
Right.
But I usually start with the, you know, and, you know, if I walk into a room, like I usually start with what's going on in this room? Like, how can I keep it natural? But then I'll try to, I'll just try to push it a little bit towards, like, a little bit more stylized, but not so it's distracted, and you know, I don't want to take away from story, but I'm usually not interested in pure naturalism.
Uh-huh.
It depends on the project. Sometimes, you know, I've shot things where, you know, it suits the story to be purely naturalistic, but generally I like to just angle it just a little bit towards being stylized, a little, very, very, very subtly.
Uh-huh. And what, just to dig into that,
yeah,
that little bit of style, what is, yeah, what,
well,
what is that?
I think often it's in the framing too. Like, I am very meticulous about my framing. Even when I shoot documentary, I, you know, if I'm shooting verite and I'm following somebody into a house, that, you know, the frame that I end on, I'm very conscious of every element that I include in the frame. And I think sometimes in my drama, I think the look of it comes from how meticulous I am about framing. And, you know, the cinematography, with every cinematographer, it's about the framing and the lighting, right? So
right.
It's the combination of the two.
So will you get right in there and cheat furniture a lot just to make sure
definitely.
That... Okay, so let's take some examples. Let's go, like, Citizen Gangster, just saw the picture, originally called Edwin Boyd.
Mm-hmm.
You shot three perf, super 35,
okay.
with just out of curiosity, which stock did you use for it?
I don't know. I can't remember. A lot of 500 and
yeah.
Maybe 250 daylight.
Which lenses were you on?
I knew you were going to ask me this when you're
Well, I'll give you the options. It was either the Ultra Primes, Master Primes.
It was, we shot with Cooks.
Got it. So a set of S4s or whatever.
Yeah.
Okay, so this movie to me looked stunning.
Mm-hmm.
Looked absolutely stunning. And so much so that I had to ask friends of mine who were cinematographers, Shago and Amelis, what was going on here. And the answer I got was that it was, first of all, I did notice that every window was just super exposed.
Mm-hmm.
And this comes around to one brilliant moment where we're staring through the bars that have been cut open in
mm-hmm.
the second breakout attempt. And all of a sudden, that background, that outside window comes into focus, at a pivotal point in the story. Was it a conscious, did you say, was it a budget thing? Was it all things working together? Or was it you said, like, I want those windows to be, like, really several stops over, and then you work the characters from there?
Mm-hmm.
Or
well, it was partly a style thing. I don't mind windows being, for that film, I didn't mind them being blown open, blown out.
It looked gorgeous.
Sometimes it was in the house, you know, I wanted to keep the lighting from the outside of the house coming in because it was a tiny, tiny house. It doesn't look as small as it was.
Right.
So I was just lighting through windows and letting them go hot. And I don't mind that. I don't mind that in that film. I don't always do that, but... And it was also just the lighting. It allowed us to shoot quite quickly and to shoot in multiple directions. If I went by a window that was actually the source, I didn't mind that the window was the source and we could see it and I could turn around. And
uh-huh.
So it was a time saver. It was a budget. Really, it was a budget thing too. But also, I didn't mind it. I liked it.
And was there a conscious decision to make it sort of a little bit less colorful? Like,
Yeah. The palette and the wardrobe, for sure, we kept all the colors very monochromatic, but then in post, we also desaturated it and played with the
even further
contrast, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, it looks gorgeous. A couple things. Right in the beginning, the opening on Scott Speedman in the booth singing, and there's this silent, brilliantly sound mixed silent shot of him singing. In the visual and the sound, you can tell he's not making this as a performer. There's a single on a wide on Speedman sitting on the bed with a big window above him, considering whether or not he's gonna go out and do this again. In the middle of his, and it just looks stunning. There's also, by the way, two wide shots of jails with snow. It's like
that.
God, I just want to walk through the snow to the building and touch it. You know
that we shot it. Well, we shot in Sault Ste. Marie, and
right.
that building is across the river in the U.S. It's actually a factory or something. So, but every morning I would wake up in my hotel room and I was looking at this building. And one day I said to Nathan, "Nathan, this is the exterior," because we didn't have an exterior. There's,
right.
So I said, you know, we'll just one morning we'll go down and we'll get a nice shot. And
that's
so,
what you did?
Yeah, so we just used that.
So it was just you and a camera and a lens?
Yeah. So that works.
This is where I throw something at you. Yeah.
Yeah. Frustrated. Yeah, it's a great building, though. Eh?
Oh, it was stunning. There was two, though, I think.
Two shots,
yeah. But is it the same building?
Same building, yeah. I think a tighter and a wider, I think, yeah. And it's interesting, I heard when Andre was talking about the choice of the lenses of Roger Deakins, I remember seeing an interview with him where, you guys have probably seen it, the one on light, it's called something...
Visions of Light.
I think so.
That's like a 20-year-old movie, right?
I don't know. They talked to him, and he's talking to the interviewer, and he says, you know, he too said, you know, I'm very particular about the lens that I use to shoot with. And he goes, for example, you're probably on a 50 mil, right? And you can hear the camera guy go, yeah. And he goes, well, let's stop. Why don't you put on a 35 or a 32? So they cut, and so all of a sudden it's kind of looser but closer, right? Because they're trying to get the same frame.
Yeah.
And he says, well, how do you think that feels now, right? And it's exactly how I feel. It's like there's...
Yeah. When I made my first picture, I lived on the 32.
Okay. Yeah.
Lived on it. In fact, anything I made since, I tried to use longer lenses just to try and do something different. Mm. And I'm completely the same, for what it's worth, I'm completely in the same mindset. Okay, so you can get, if you want to get, you know, haunting, you get with Polanski and all of a sudden you're right there, you know, and that starts to look, you know, grotesque or, you know, exaggerated, perverted, but there is something amazing about what happens to a close-up versus a, you know, a close-up versus a close-up, you know, and, I totally hear that. So, actually, why don't we just repeat, are we rolling again?
Yep.
Why don't we just repeat this? You were just saying that you you don't like long lenses. You know?
Well, I for most work, I prefer to be a little looser but closer, and I feel like it just it brings you more into the story, and it doesn't. I don't like being too far away. I feel that, for me as a cinematographer anyway, when I see a film like that. To me, that actually feels like people say that's more of a documentary aesthetic or something like that. I get taken away from the story when I'm too long and too far away.
Right.
I know it frees up the actors because the camera is like 30 feet away or something like that, but photographically, I get taken out of the story because it's too long. I prefer kind of being in, and I think that comes from shooting documentary because in documentary, you know, if you're shooting verite, you're usually a little looser, and you're with people. If you're following somebody through a house or through a building into a car, you have to be a little bit looser and with the person because you're following them, right? And so that aesthetic, I think, is born out of documentary. I know that Roger Deakins also has shot a lot of documentary,
right.
And I think that, not to compare myself to Roger Deakins.
No, but in many ways, one might say you are the Canadian
that,
Roger Deakins.
That aesthetic, careful.
Careful, that? What? Would it be so wrong?
No, I can't say that.
Okay, you know? But I did.
No.
It's easy for me.
Sure, easy for you.
There is a certain similarity between, I don't know when I compare work, it's silly. You have an aesthetic that is gripping and natural and fun to watch. I just want to go back to something I was talking about before about Citizen Gangster. I was saying about how you rearrange the furniture because full disclosure, I know that you. Somebody told me once that you will go to extreme lengths to rearrange the room.
Yeah,
not extreme lengths, but like you'll take the time.
Yeah.
So, can you think of any scenes in there where you really manipulated and because you don't notice it? The thing about your films, you don't notice the manipulation.
Yeah, I mean, the film is all about the art of the cheat, right?
Right.
And a lot of people get, I think the less experience you have, the less you get hung up on the cheat, right? And, I'm talking with the director, I know what the edit is going to be, I know what our shots are, I know that I can move that vase, like, you know, 5 feet to the right. You know?
Right.
I know that it's not going to matter, you know?
Right.
And that comes with experience, too. You know, I think when you start off, you're like, oh, God, you feel bad that you can move that table 2 feet. But then after a while, you realize, God, I can move that table 10 feet, you know. And so every DP does that, you know. It's like, I'm not, you know, it's common.
And so it's just, you just, over the years, have developed an automatic trigger that you know what you
Yeah, can. I think, you know, I'm very particular about composition, and so I'll move objects around, but, you know, within the realm of keeping it real and not, you know, not ruining continuity.
What makes a good composition? Steve Cousins.
Balance. And I think, you know, a good frame can have, a head down a lower right and have nothing except for, you know, a piece of light in the very top left, you know? Before I got into film, I actually studied graphic design. That was what I first went into when I got out of high school. I studied graphic design, which I enjoyed, but I realized I just didn't want to do that. But I've always, the way that I see things is very graphic. It always has been. It was my draw in graphic design and in photography. When I go into a room or if I'm looking for locations with the director, I look for graphic qualities in the location. It doesn't matter what it is. So because I know how I'm going to frame it, and if I know the scene is by the window, it's like, what's the shape of that window? You know, we'll choose not to use a house because of the shape of the windows. You know, we'll use another house because of the shape of the window, because I know I'm going to probably put that person against the window.
Excellent. There is one sequence in Citizen Gangster I also wanted to ask you about. When they formed this new gang, the Boyd Gang, and broke out of jail the first time. So, by the way, universally, the picture, writing, direction, performances, all stellar across the board. It really did not feel like, again, kind of like your other film, did not feel like whatever a typical Canadian film feels like. It just felt really great. And for a movie that's about a bank robber, so much of it was about the character development and such tremendous performances between all the actors. But there's this very familiar camaraderie that they have in a room with a swinging light bulb. And we kind of go back to this space a little bit. Was it at all conscious that, you know, we have all this, although the windows were hard sources, they were always, to me, kind of like evenly, softly lit, you know, from one direction. And then all of a sudden we're in this room with this really hard, you know, clear source. Was that, you know, like signaling the downfall, or was it just
I distinctly wanted just something different. I wanted the light to not, I wanted it to be a little garish, a little harder, and just a different feel in that space, but also to feel fairly naturalistic, that it was a bit of a dive, and that it's believable, that it didn't have a shade on it, it was just a, you know, bare bulb, and also just for speed of shooting, we had so much to shoot in there. There's several scenes that aren't in the film that we shot in that same space.
Right.
So I needed a lighting setup that was, I could move and, you know, go 360 and you know, do a lot. So the single light bulb just worked for me, and I love bare light bulbs. And we were shooting on film too, so I wasn't too worried about the latitude of it. So it was really an aesthetic choice, but helped with speed too.
Talk a little bit about shooting formats, just because people who watch this are, you know, they're either really, really curious culture nuts, or they're just really, really into photography and all of its elements, and want to know this type of thing. I mean, obviously, different formats are just different tools, but if how do you feel about shooting digital? If so, what kind? What which options out there? Obviously, there's the Alexa and the Red right now. You know what? What is something you don't even want to think about? I really like shooting film. Like, you know, I've heard every attitude on this from different sources. They're all interesting. I'm just curious about yours.
Well, if I could shoot on film, I would shoot on film. Those days are gone.
Right.
For the most part, I mean, in my world, I mean, for the kind of level of productions that I do, for the budgets that I tend to work on, people want to shoot on HD. I'm not really a fan of the Red camera for some reason. I think it's the difference between Kodak and Fuji or something. I don't know what it is. It's the electronics. I'm just not really a fan of the Red. There's something about it. It's intangible for me because I'm trying to understand it, but I do like the Alexa. And I just shot a film. I've shot quite a bit with the Alexa now, but the film I just shot, I feel like I have it kind of dialed in to look as much like film as I can, and with filters and stuff.
Was it tough to adapt to, you know, 14 stops of latitude in this camera? You know, was that take some getting used to, or was
no.
it just,
no? I mean, I think I honestly have shot it for the most part like film. I think a lot of people, you know, when they make the transition from film to video, I think people think that you can just shoot video without taking care so much of the highlights and controlling windows and that kind of stuff. And I really just take as much care as I always have with film, with video, to, right. you know, keep, you know, keep the darks, keep some detail in the darks if I want to, or, you know, keeping some detail in the window or letting it blow out. Regardless, I still work the same way with, you know, taking care of the image, you know.
Do you have some favorite images from some of your work?
Well, there's one shot that right now that I absolutely love in the film that I just shot days and nights, and it's a shot of our lead character swimming at night, coming down a pathway and going into the woods, or coming through some woods down a pathway. And going under the water into the blackness of the water, and then she swam out of frame, so you actually never see her come up again.
Uh-huh.
And I just lit it with one light, Maxi Brew. But I, you know, I had the Maxi in just a nice spot to catch all the leaves and her, and she's kind of silhouette all the way down, and then you just see her lit figure in the blackness of the water, the inky water, and then she goes under. And for me, it was just. It was perfect. Like like when I'm trying to sculpt a shot, is if I can do it with one light or no lights. For me, a night shot with one light that where I just get like a beautiful composition and also just the content of it too. To me, that was just I was happy.
You're in heaven about that. Yeah. Is there nothing like that experience when you are envisioning something and then you go to execute and it works out to your vision, or even better than you envisioned? Or
yeah, I think, you know, it's always, I mean, the great thing about film is you always envision, you know, you envision the film, and then when you start to see it come together, and it's such a great feeling to see this world come together how you've imagined it, or talked about it with the director. And and then, you know, of course, when you get the actors in there and you see them bring it alive, so it's not just about the shot, it's about, it's everything. It's the shot. It's the set design. It's this, you know, amazing performance that, you know, that are all coming together. It's bigger than the sum of its parts when it's so satisfying. You know,
where do you want to go? I mean, you've made transition as an artist over the years you've been doing this, but your work, it's not like as though, oh, we're going from all the way far left all the way far right. You're you're simply really honing like a fine chef. You're honing your craft and your style, and you can see that in Citizen Gangster. And I hope you don't take that the wrong way when I say that. I mean that, you know, you see this development as an artist. Where do you want to go from here? I mean, you know, you just want to continue to just tighten that.
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, I kind of just, you know, I synthesize. Like, you know, I'm so inspired by photography and music and painting, and I think as a cinematographer, my work will always be kind of evolving because I'm always influenced by the other arts, and, you know, I'm always synthesizing these different aspects from different arts, and so I don't really, I myself don't know where my work is going to go. You know, I will only continue to just, you know, bring those other influences into my work, and who knows where it will go. You know, I'm always, every DP has this little, you know, neurotic, you know, sort of, you know, when you, like for years I was trying to master the, you know, the overexposure of hot sunlight on a face, right? Like that alone takes a while to, you know, and the angle of it, and, you know, there's these subtle nuances of lighting that DPs try to craft and to, fine-tune, and, you know, I'm still doing that, but in terms of my own style or, you know, what I like, I think I'm still evolving, and yeah, my craft will evolve. I don't know where it's going.
That's a fabulous answer. On a side note, shooting television, you shot one Canadian series, which was a looked fantastic, but if I'm not mistaken, I think the either the network or the broadcasters have took the timing away from you on that series, or timed it in a way that maybe you wouldn't have. And then you also shot for a U.S. series when it was how many episodes did you do? It was the casino one.
Tilt, yeah.
Shooting television versus shooting film. Shooting features, rather. Yeah.
Well, TV is evolving. It's becoming, you know, there's a lot more work in TV, and the art of TV shooting is evolving, I think. You know, like I look at Boardwalk Empire that I think is great. Jonathan Freeman did fantastic work. You know, to be able to tell a story in, say, 12 episodes, you know, compared to having to tell a story in 2 hours, right? Like, you can get so much more. If the writing is good and the thought is there, you can have such a more well-crafted story. And that goes for lighting and everything, right? You have more time, you know, if the budget is good. But in terms of shooting, I think it really depends on what director you get teamed up with, or directors that you get teamed up with when you're making TV, because some directors will be more cinematic, and some directors want to just default to the, you know, over the shoulder wide shot. And, you know, that's when it's just not very much fun.
Right.
And it gets pretty stale.
Right.
You know, but then a good director will come along and, you know, do a nice fluid shot where you follow somebody into a room and you move and it's got, you know, there's a nice orchestration and it's got life, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
That's great. Thoughts from you about a few cinematographers who I'd like to ask about?
Okay, yeah.
Recently deceased, recently passed away, Harris Avides.
Yeah. Well, I remember being so inspired by Birth, actually. For the longest time, even the soundtrack, I was listening to it forever. And his work always, it was just so elegant and simple. And I liked the way that he used top light in Birth. It's such a soft, diffused top light. And just his compositions and his style is so understated. But still, I mean, it's stylized for sure. Like, apartments do not look like that in Birth. So it's natural, it's naturalistic, but yet it's totally stylized. So yeah, I'm a big fan, very much influenced by him.
Roger Deakins, just give me your highlight reel, because his career is a veritable highlight reel.
Yeah. So. Well, of course, every DP has been influenced by Roger Deakins. Just his simplicity and his naturalism, and you know, his the quality of his lights, the quality of his compositions. Obviously, I'm trying to think of a film. Like, which one of his films? We'll have to. Yeah.
I can name them for you if you want.
Yeah, yeah.
Man Who Wasn't There. Mm. That's a Coen Brothers picture. Yeah. Shawshank Redemption.
Yeah.
House of Sand and Fog.
Mm-hmm.
Big Lebowski. Barton Fink.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
I think just generally his use of light, the quality of his light, and I think he keeps things so simple. And his you know, when you're DP, often it's about time. More than anything, it's about time, especially in Canada. It's about going into location and knowing, okay, I'm going to do this, and you don't have time to really, you know, misstep. I always compare it to, like, if you're running to kick a soccer ball, and sometimes you have to take a stutter step right before you kick. In film in Canada, because it's so low budget, most of the stuff, you have to get it right.
Right.
And it's about, if you put up a big light, it takes time to put that big light up. So you really have to nail the angle, and you really have to know. And I find Roger Deakins, so often the light is just in it's always in the sweet spot. Like, he knows how to do it simply and elegantly.
Right. Thoughts on Mr. Gordon Willis?
Yeah, well, you know, of course, again, I'm sure every DP has been influenced by Gordon Willis. You know, for me, The Godfather, when I saw The Godfather and the top light in The Godfather, for me, is a revelation, because, again, It's totally stylized. But you just buy that there's this kind of heavenly glow coming from above, but it's kind of naturalistic, and that you didn't see into people's eyes. You know, I love that. And you know, his other film, Interiors, that he shot with Woody Allen.
Oh, yeah.
For me, the framing of interiors and the light was really inspiring to me. And obviously just a master of his generation.
What can you put a finger on what it was that he brought to photography that wasn't there before?
Well, for me, I just think of The Godfather, and I think of the top light in The Godfather.
Yeah.
For me, I think that was it. You know, I think in the new wave, Raoul Coutard, you know, they would go into location, they would bounce a light off of the roof or something in order to create the ambience in the room. And I noticed in a lot of Godard films that there is kind of like a soft toppiness that's coming from having just bounced the lights into the roof. And I think, you know, the Gordon Willis is him creating this soft toppiness in my own mind was in kind of a, just taking that a little further, stylizing it a little bit. An evolution of that.
Is there a napkin somewhere? I'm just like, my allergies. I apologize for reason.
6 minutes
over there. Okay, fine. Thanks. Oh, we're good. Oh, yeah, we're good. Okay, perfect. Okay, so, this is. First of all, while you're talking and you're thinking, like, I can't. I'm cutting that in my head, and it's all good.
Okay, cool.
It's really good, and you said some fabulous things. Is there any other movies that you want me to ask about? Because I haven't seen all of your films.
The Tracy Fragments.
How could I have missed it? Right. The Tracy Fragments.
Well, for me, the Tracy Fragments. It was the first time that I worked with Bruce McDonald, it was the first time that I shot on kind of a prosumer video camera, the HVX, the DVX 100. And it, to me, it was a revelation that you can kind of move so quickly and get a decent latitude with video. Again, also because it was low budget, we were moving quickly and I wanted to use all natural light. I didn't want to use any light. I kind of just said to myself, okay, you know, we don't have the time. And I wanted to use natural light, but again, I wanted to kind of just stylize it a little bit. So, you know, Bruce was on board with that. So we really went into that just shooting it almost like a documentary.
Right.
But then just kind of stylizing a little bit. And, you know, just stylizing in terms of, you know, where you put that practical light in relation to your actor. I love the tone of that film and the feel of it. And I think the editing...
I was going to say it is an editor's movie. That movie,
yeah.
I think it was Gareth Scales and Jeremy Muntz and
Matt Hannum.
Matt Hannum as well, who all dove in and cut that picture.
Yeah. Yeah.
And what was it? So as a photographer, having shot, what was it, 20 or 25 days that you shot the movie for?
Yeah, something like that.
And then you turn around and you see this thing with upwards of 99 tiles on the screen.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of fitting that I'm blocking your camera while I'm talking about the Tracy Fragments are here. This morning. What was it like to watch it cut together?
I always knew it was going to be that way. Yeah. It wasn't a surprise that it was cut like that. And so we, you know, while we were shooting it, I collected as many different angles of, you know, if Ellen was sitting there, I would, you know, shoot her feet and, you know, just get all these strips, knowing that there were going to be these multiple boxes used.
Yeah.
And also I asked another DP to come along, Michael LeBlanc, to shoot, you know, some of the toys and, you know, some stuff like just against black, because I knew those were going to be used in the boxes too. So for me, it was interesting because I knew that those were all going to be amalgamated into this kind of block aesthetic. So it was exciting in a way because I didn't know exactly what it would be, but I knew it was going to happen. So it was fun.
Makes it really tough to get upset about a shot.
Yeah.
Which one are you upset about? Yeah.
Right.
Ready on the screen. There.
Yeah. I mean, the great thing about it is I love that film. Some people drive them crazy, but I love, each time I see it, I'm watching a different story. My eye is moving in a different direction each time. And for me, that's I like that about that film.
Well, sincerely, from us here at Craft Truck, from me personally, I want to say thank you for Thanks. What you've contributed to this country's culture, Thanks. To our film.
Thank you.
And we look forward to many, many more years of Steve cool. Cousins.
Thanks. Thanks so much.
For joining us.
Thank you.
Okay, take care. That's about it.
Okay.
You want a beer?